An article by Dr. Dale Tackett recently caught my attention. In it, he shared information about the current state of the Christian church concerning fundamental issues of integrating Bible knowledge and evangelism into individual lives. And this is a quote. "Here's the big problem. Non-biblical worldview ideas don't just sit in a book somewhere waiting for people to examine them. They bombard us constantly from television, film, music, newspapers, magazines, books, and academia. Because we live in a selfish, fallen world, these ideas seductively appeal to the desires of our flesh, and we often end up incorporating them into our personal worldview. Sadly, we often do this without even knowing it. For example, most Christians would agree with 1 Thessalonians 4:3 and other scriptures that command us to avoid sexual immorality. But how often do Christians fall into lust or premarital or extramarital sexual sin? Is it simply because they are weak when tempted? Or did it begin much earlier with the seductive lies from our sexualized society? If we don't really believe the truth of God and live it, then our witness will be confusing and misleading. Most of us go through life not recognizing that our personal worldviews have been deeply affected by the world. Through the media and other influences, the secularized American view of history, law, politics, science, God, and man affects our thinking more than we realize. We then are taken captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world, rather than Christ. However, by diligently learning, applying and trusting God's truths in every area of our lives, whether it's watching a movie, communicating with our spouses, raising our children, or working at the office, we can begin to develop a deep, comprehensive faith that will stand against the unrelenting tide of our culture's non-biblical ideas. If we capture and embrace more of God's worldview and trust it with unwavering faith, then we begin to make the right decisions and form the appropriate responses to questions on abortion, same-sex marriage, cloning, stem cell research, and even media choices. Because, in the end, it is our decisions and actions that reveal what we really believe." End quote. Where can you start to grasp a biblical worldview, and then how do you build that belief system? Stay tuned for my conversation with Lenny Esposito of Come Reason Ministries as we discuss this and more next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
Well, the time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
It's called the American Dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show, friends. You may subscribe to Soaring Eagle Radio on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode on our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. My guest today is Lenny Esposito. Lenny is president and founder of Come Reason Ministries, a Christian apologetics organization, and author of the popular www.cometoreason.org website. He's a contributor to the Apologetic Study Bible for Students, He has taught apologetics and Christian worldview for over 17 years and has authored hundreds of articles dealing with intellectually strenuous topics such as the existence of God, theology, philosophy, social issues, and biblical difficulties. Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Lenny.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me. I'm just excited to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the show and to chat with you. I've been a big fan of your work and writing for a long time. Lenny C.S. Lewis, I want to start with a quote from him. He once remarked, "One must keep on pointing out that Christianity is a statement which, if false, is of no importance, and if true, of infinite importance. The one thing it cannot be is moderately important." And then a quote from Francis Schaeffer that builds on that. He masterfully illustrated one of the important points of contrasting Christianity and other faith systems in his book, The God Who Is. Schaeffer wrote this: "One day I was talking to a group of people in the digs of a young South African in Cambridge. Among others, there was present a young Indian who was of Sikh background, but a Hindu by religion. He started to speak strongly against Christianity, but did not really understand the problems of his own beliefs. So I said, 'Am I not correct in saying that on the basis of your system, cruelty and non-cruelty are ultimately equal, and that there is no intrinsic difference between them?' And he agreed. The student in whose room we met, who had clearly understood the implications of what the Sikh had admitted, picked up his kettle of boiling water, in which he was about to make tea, and stood with it steaming over the Indian's head. The man looked up and asked what he was doing, and the student said, with a cold yet gentle finality, 'There is no difference between cruelty and non-cruelty.' Thereupon the Hindu walked out into the night," end quote. Lenny, there is a distinct and clear difference between Christianity and other faith systems, and you've made clarifying these differences your life's work. Would you share with our listeners how you became interested in apologetics to begin with?
Well, you know, that's a pretty interesting question, because my goal when I first started was not to be an apologist. I was interested in technology, and this was the mid-90s when the internet was, you know, still in three-cornered shorts. Netscape 2.0 was coming out, and, you know, so I started in what I call the gray page days of the internet.
Yes.
And I wanted to create a website. This was new and exciting thing, but I wanted to do it. I wanted to take the Bible seriously. That was my only goal. We read the Bible, and sometimes we read the stories in almost a fairy tale fashion. You know, Peter says, "Lord, if it's you, call me out of the boat and I'll come walking on the water toward you." And he says, "Yes, come." And Peter just does it, right?
Yeah.
And I start thinking, well, you know, wait a minute, 32-year-old, you know, lifelong fisherman, what is his going through his mind as he's putting his feet over the edge of the boat?
Right.
You know, let's stop a minute and really take this seriously, put it in a real world context. So that was my goal. Of course, in order to start a website, you really needed to have some content.
Yes.
So what I did was I started looking around. Back then we had bulletin boards, which is where most of the conversations happened, local dial-ups and things. I found a gentleman who was talking with a Christian and offering his atheist arguments. And I grabbed his post, and with his permission, I answered every single one of his arguments, and I started it off on my site, called it Answering an Atheist. And then he wrote back, and I wrote him back. Then someone else wrote another question, and I started answering that. And that's kind of how the Lord brought me into apologetics. It was kind of his calling, and I started exploring more and more about not only what it means to understand the Bible in the real world, but what the broader implications of a biblical worldview truly are. And so the ministry started online very early, and then we grew into speaking and writing and a lot of other things.
It has really blossomed into quite a work. I want to give our listeners that web address again, www.comereason.org. And if you haven't been to Lenny's site before, you're going to be blessed. There's an abundance of articles and resources to help you in your own study. So you jumped into it by wanting to clarify and make clear the truths of the Bible, and then it just kind of mushroomed from there. What are there any authors or maybe pastors, other apologists that you really took an interest in their work and they helped you develop your own skills as an apologist, Lenny?
Oh yeah. Of course, you know, back or even in the 80s, even before the 90s, we were listening to the Bible Answer Man on the radio every day,
sure.
Walter Martin.
Yes.
And as I got into this, you know, Evidence That Demands a Verdict by Josh McDowell were kind of just foundational for many Christians. But as I got into apologetics proper, then really a couple of guys, I'm fairly close to Biola University and had attended some of their events. Got to know J.P. Moreland, who's been a friend and really has mentored me in much of that, my growth, as well as later on William Lane Craig. And then just from there, just kind of growing in the community and knowing all of the different folks, which is really an incredible, we are truly, as it has been said, living in the golden age of apologetics. Even Oz Giddens has said this, that we are in a time now where apologetics is just blossoming everywhere. We have so many good thinkers, and the arguments are so much more robust that it's really been a blessing to kind of learn from one another and grow in this time. So
yeah, my background, as you know, Lenny, is in apologetics as well. And but one of the things that I wanted to ask your take on. And it still surprises me when I run into it. In fact, I just ran into it maybe 3 days ago, posting something on social media, an apologetics article, and I had a man that responded back and said, "Why do we need apologetics?" And I thought, hasn't that question been answered already? I mean, even within the church, Lenny, we have skeptics that say, wait a minute, why do we need apologetics? So how do you answer that?
Well, some of it comes from, a misunderstanding. The word apologetics, it kind of gets twisted because some of it is simply because it's technical in nature. Mm-hmm. There's argumentation and debate.
Yes.
And people can misconstrue that as being merely head knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Or theology, and we have to first dispel that. Really, what I say is apologetics is theology practically applied.
Oh, perfect.
It's taking the abstract ideas of God, who He is, how He wants us to live our lives, and placing them against how the world truly is, and showing the disconnect between those two things.
Yes.
So that's a big piece. Now, sometimes that resistance comes, again, from people who don't understand or are intimidated maybe by the big boys of apologetics. They think there's this high level of intellectual acumen that you have to have. And so that intimidates a lot of people. So many times I don't even use the word apologetic. I just talk about, you know, defending your faith and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Sometimes even with leaders in the church, it can be a difficult sell. Now, many pastors are, you know, very open to having you help them. They're busy guys.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's just a matter of, wow, you know, I can't start myself another ministry. Other pastors are a little bit gun shy about the whole thing. I've said before that sometimes coming up to a pastor and telling him you want to start an apologetics ministry is like a man walking up to his Jewish mother and saying he wants to be a proctologist.
yeah.
You know, the response usually is, well, it's nice you want to be a doctor, but why did you have to pick that?
Right.
You know, it's nice you want to be in ministry. We appreciate that, but why this little esoteric kind of... But apologetics isn't that, and we should know and see today more than ever how important it is.
Yes.
To talk about not just the theoretical, but how it actually, where the rubber hits the road in terms of marriage, in terms of religious freedom and religious liberty, and and how Christianity has actually contributed to the culture as opposed to detracted from it, things like that. So when I talk with folks, you know, I give them a couple of points that apologetics is good that they hadn't maybe thought about before.
Yes.
One is the fact that apologetics, I consider it ministerial to the believer.
Yeah.
It actually performs a ministry to you. And I tell them this story about when my wife was delivering our third child. She had a very rare medical condition called HELLP syndrome. They had to do an emergency C-section. She was at death's door, really. So we came in thinking that we were going to have this wonderful birth experience, and turns around and she's dying from the pregnancy. And so you're sitting in a room in the dark and you're praying about it. And it's those points, those crisis moments of your life, really when most people start to say, you know, are my prayers doing any good?
Mm-hmm.
Are they only bouncing against the ceiling? What, you know, yeah. I've been a good person. Why does God even let this happen to me? I don't even understand it.
Yeah.
Well, I was sitting there praying that, and I said, you know what? First of all, it's the worst time in the world to ask these big questions. When you're emotionally upset,
yeah.
when you're right, not understanding what's going on, you're confused. It's a terrible time to ask those issues. But for me, I said, you know what? I've already worked through the issue of whether God exists or not. I've read the best arguments that the atheists have, and I've read the best arguments that the Christians have, and I know the Christians have the better answer.
Yes.
I've already worked through the issue of whether Jesus truly rose from the dead. I can't doubt those things because I've already settled on them, and I've settled on them clearly and doing a thorough job of it. So now, God, I don't understand what you're doing, but I do know that you're there.
Yes.
And all I can do is put my trust in you. So apologetics is ministerial to the believer. It helps you ground and root yourself and the church in the faith so that we don't lose these kids who are going off to college. You know, the Lifeway survey says somewhere between 70% plus of kids who go off to college stop going to church and disconnect from all of their faith environments. And we got to do something about that.
Yes.
Now, similarly, one of the things that I think is important is apologetics is also very important in the current, you know, everybody's looking to be relevant today, right?
Yeah.
You want to be relevant, talk about apologetics. We're hitting all of the hot button issues with the Planned Parenthood videos that are burning through the internet right now. You want to talk about same-sex marriage. You want to talk about did the Christians cause the Crusades and torture people? You know, the problem of evil in the world. We are very, very relevant. So you don't need to create a program for your church that uses, you know, lighting and smoke machines and things like that. You want to be relevant. Just make sure that your youth group is imbibed with a good apologetic. Once a month, maybe have a Q&A session and show, and you will find that you are relevant. I go on college campuses where we set up a couple of microphones and we let the student body of any college campus come and ask us questions, you know, grill the Christian idea.
Yes.
And we get to respond with that. And everybody's interested in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really great opportunity for a witness. And again, to show people that the body of Christ, it's not just faith or reason.
Yes.
It's reason that anchors your faith.
Yes. Yeah. Lenny, you just touched on two very important points, and that is evangelism and discipleship. One of the things, or one of the strategies I use when I talk to pastors or other believers in describing the need for apologetics, is that I tell them that the apologetic task or effort is really all about answering objections that people have, or answering their questions. Sometimes it's not posed as an objection, it's just a question. But answering all of those questions and or objections, so that you can remove all of those, so that people can see the cross of Jesus Christ clearly. Apologetics is not a silver bullet. It's not a weapon that we use to bludgeon people. Really, it's about leading people to faith in Christ, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. It's getting people to think clearly. I mean, if we're to take the Bible seriously, we know that the devil is a liar.
Yes. Yes.
And one of the things that he does is use the philosophy of this world to twist and distort the truth value of God's creation. And so part of what apologetics does is try to correct some of those misunderstandings, misinterpretations. You know, C.S. Lewis, who you quoted earlier, said, good philosophy must exist for no other reason than that bad philosophy needs to be answered. And I think that's right. One aspect of what apologetics does. Secondly, another point is that many of the people out there are just simply regurgitating, either unknowingly or knowingly, misinformation so that they can try to sway you away from God.
Yes.
And we need to, provide the best case for the gospel. We need to say why it's important. This is historically what's happened in the church. If you go back and look at the early church fathers, most doctrine, most writings that we see of the early church fathers were Christians responding to heresies or yes. Christians responding to the critiques of the Romans or, pick a guy, Origen, Justin Martyr, yes. Tertullian, pick anybody. And you'll see what they're doing is they are responding to the misunderstanding of the broader community so yes. that people can more easily grasp the gospel message and see it as it truly is, as opposed to a warped or distorted view.
Yes. So apologetics is applicable both inside the church and outside the church. Inside the church to encourage and equip believers, outside the church to answer objections that unbelievers might raise. What could we tell our listeners, Lenny? What advice would you give to those who may be interested in approaching their pastor or church leadership about apologetics training, or maybe they're already starting to explore apologetics on their own through a home Bible study, but they would really like to see this brought into their church. Is there any advice that you could give to them in that direction?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things. And as I said, most churches, the pastor wears so many hats. And if you come to him and say, boy, I'd really like to see this church have an apologetic study, what he's going to hear is, boy, I'd really like to see you come up with a new curriculum, come up with a new night to set up the chairs, come up with your, right? Again, the good apologist understands his receptors' view of what he's saying and filters it that way. And so mm-hmm. with your pastor, you have to understand this as well. So maybe if you want to see it brought into the church, maybe a better way would say, you know what, I have this, we have some great William Lane Craig debates on the existence of God, or I purchased the, On Guard or something like that. Yeah. Can we sit down? Can I have a room that I'll come in and set up, and then maybe for 6 weeks we can go work through these things or watch this video and have some discussion afterwards. If you can tie it into a home group that, if your church has a home group, small groups program that already exists, or maybe a Sunday school where they're looking for teachers, these are the places where you want to plug in, because now you're lifting a burden
yes.
off the pastor as opposed to adding one to him.
Yes.
And at the same time, you're not saying, I'm going to start a 5-year plan. Yeah, that's a little too ambitious.
Right.
maybe if you have seminary training and stuff like that, you can do that. But start a little small. Again, my first entry into apologetics, I just wanted to write a website. I just wanted to write a little web page with a Q&A on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start a little small. And if you're faithful there, then that, God can grow that. But I would look for those kinds of opportunities within the church. Talk with a couple of 3 or 4 folks. If the pastor isn't quite ready for that yet, you can do a home study. You can open it up in your house, talk to your friends around the church, mm-hmm. and plan something like that. That's completely doable. And what you may find is that people don't realize the treasure the church has in their intellectual tradition. We've almost bought the modernist idea that faith is somehow completely separated from reason and they exist in two separate mm-hmm. spheres.
Yes.
That's not been the case. Even as recently as the 1930s, you used to watch movies like The Bells of St. Mary, and the expert, the guy that everybody would go to, was the priest, the town priest. He was the most learned one in the institution. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not true. They always, you know, bring out a guy in a white lab coat thinking that he's going to be able to answer everything.
Yes, yes.
And he's actually limited. The scientist doesn't know anything about philosophy. He doesn't understand metaphysics. He doesn't understand any of those spiritual aspects as well. So he's actually one small subset of knowledge of humanity. And we can, again, once people start to dig into this and understand the wealth the Christian tradition has in terms of its intellectual background, a lot of people would be surprised.
Yeah, yeah. So that covers folks inside the church that are considering it. How about folks that are they're being led to really get involved in evangelism, but they feel completely inadequate, not to mention scared stiff. So those folks that are looking to engage our culture, but they know that they're going to face a challenge right off the bat. What advice could we give them?
Well, we are at a point in time that is unlike any previous, in that we have things like the internet and we have instant communication channels, which have made entry into evangelism and apologetics not only easier, but actually more appropriate than ever before. When someone wants to get involved in witnessing, here's a couple of things that I do. First of all, make sure that you read. Get yourself some good apologetics books.
Yeah.
Pick one or two subjects that truly interests you. And study those. And try to read even arguments from the opposite side so that you know what people are thinking and what they're going to say.
Yes.
Familiarize yourself with the arguments from both sides. And get them down. And then the next piece you can do is maybe write a letter to the editor of your local paper. Writing is a wonderful way to build your apologetic because you think more slowly. You're not trying to just rapid fire, he said this, I have to say that kind of thing. You can actually develop your argument. You can edit yourself as opposed to, you know, after your 5-minute exchange, your best arguments always come in the car as you're driving home.
Right.
This way you can actually kind of craft what you're going to say, read it over a second time, ask somebody else to read it, and then send it. And you can do that same kind of thing online. I have several articles on my blog site that talk about how to approach online conversations, asking questions, understanding where arguments are going to lead, where people are going to, you know, where people's beliefs are going to follow. But you can start that way. And then you can grow from there. There's a talk that I gave, I think it's one of my podcast calls, talking about God at Starbucks. And it just talks about, you know, ways you can ask questions, understand other people's points of view, and really develop a faith conversation without even having to put out any of your own beliefs. The role of asking questions, because what you'll find is most people have not been reflective enough to know why they believe what they believe either.
That's true, yeah.
And if you're asking them questions, then the burden of proof is no longer on you. So that's a great way to approach things. And it keeps you from arguing because you're at, right? It's the second grade class photo approach. You guys remember those old second grade class photos? You remember that terrible thing where all the kids were all about like 30 kids and one of them was holding the plaque and you had the teachers on both sides, right?
Yep.
Now, whenever they pass those photos out, what does everybody do first? They look for themselves.
Yes.
That's what we do as people. We look for ourselves. So if you're asking somebody questions, all of a sudden they're saying, well, this guy's a really good conversationalist. He wants to know about all the interesting things that I'm
right.
about.
Yep.
And so by asking questions, you get to build a rapport. You get to understand more of an individual. And you get to know which way to take the conversation. I had, I'll tell you one quick story.
Sure.
I had a Jehovah's Witness lady come to my door. Actually, it was on a Thursday and I wasn't home. My son had answered the door and she was there with her daughter. And, you know, my kids know that you don't turn away anyone like this who's talking about faith at the door. So my son tells her, well, gee, you know, my dad's not here right now, but I'm sure he would really like to talk with you. Would you mind coming back on Saturday? And now he said Saturday because Saturday was my birthday and he hadn't bought me anything yet. So that would cover his gift. But she agreed. She comes back and we sit down and I start asking her. The first question I ask her is, you know, we start talking a little bit about is Jesus God, right? Typical Jehovah's Witness kind of stuff. But before I get too far into it, I don't want this to be a he said, she said kind of thing. And I asked her, can I ask you a question? Have you been a Jehovah's Witness all your life? And she said, well, no, only the past 5 or 6 years or so. So well, that's really interesting. There's a lot of faith traditions out there, and you've just turned, you know, become a Jehovah's Witness in the last 5 or 6 years. Can you tell me what it was that attracted you to the witnesses? Okay. Perfect. And this is a key, this is a key question.
Yeah.
And she gives me this story. She says, well, you know, I had a brother and my brother was several years older than me. I loved my brother very much growing up, but my brother also had some mental health issues. So he was mentally disabled in certain ways. And it caused him to behave in ways that were, well, unmentionable. I mean, he did some things that were really unforgivable. But, you know, he was my brother, and I looked up to him, and I loved him. She says, my brother, you know, in his mid-30s, because of his health issues, passed away. And I started wondering where he was. I didn't want to think of my brother in hell, but I couldn't possibly imagine somebody who's done those things going to heaven. So I started a search, and after 2 years, I came to the conclusion that the Jehovah's Witnesses give me the truth about heaven and about God. Wow. So, given that conversation, do you think me talking about Granville Sharp's rule of three is going to make any difference in this woman's life at all?
Yeah, good point.
So the conversation immediately shifts for me to God's forgiveness, to his available grace to all of those who, you know, can't understand his, you know, how much the gospel message means and things like that. So we can have a conversation on it, but I wouldn't have had that conversation had I not asked the questions.
Yes.
So that's, these are the kind of key pieces that one really has to develop. Understanding that as an apologist, your point isn't to you know, win the trophy for Christianity. Your point is to love the person to Christ.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lenny, you've been doing this for quite some time, and I imagine that you've seen some questions just recycled again and again and again, maybe put in a little different way. So I'm curious, what are some of the most frequently asked questions that you receive from unbelievers?
Well, we do get a lot of from staunch atheists. We do get a lot of, you know, how can you believe that God exists? Especially with the problem of evil. You know, there's so much suffering in the world. What kind of a good God would allow this kind of suffering? You also get nowadays the idea of an objective truth is really, especially when I go on college campus, I'll take kids. We'll do what we call apologetics missions trips, where I'll take a youth group, and these are sometimes high school maybe and college kids, and we'll go on campus at like UC Berkeley. I mean, we won't mess around. We'll go to to the lion's mouth, as it were. We'll ask atheists, prominent atheists, to come in and give the kids a 20-minute talk, and then we get to ask the atheist questions. Or we go on campus and we start engaging with the students and start asking them questions. And again, this is what we find out is that when we start talking about moral grounding, most people have this really contradictory set of claims in their head about what morality is. So on one hand, they say morality really is a social construct, or it's either a social construct or it's an evolutionary mechanism that helps us survive.
Yeah.
both of which means morality is not objective. It's either rooted in the society or it's rooted in just fostering the propagation of the species.
Yes.
But on the other hand, when I turn around and ask those folks, well, can you tell me what's one problem plaguing all of humanity? Everybody at Berkeley has an answer to that question. It's either, you know, climate change or the subjugation of women or, you know, the 1%. There's tons of different activist modes that folks will go in when I ask them that question. So I get to turn around and say, well, if there is no such thing as an objective right and wrong, then how can this be a problem plaguing all of humanity? How do you reconcile those two things? And again, it gets the conversation started really, really well. So those are big questions that we tend to hear over and over again. And a problem of evil is not an easy one to answer, but you can help people along by using a good analogy with it. I've used a couple of different things that have really kind of put a picture on that, and it's really helped folks a lot. So.
Yeah, that's a great strategy to use because it really exposes the weakness that the unbeliever has in their system of thinking. Every belief system, even unbelief in the Christian belief system, has a foundational worldview, and you touched on that just now in that illustration of doing evangelistic apologetics, some might say, there at Berkeley. So what do we mean by that phrase, Lenny, worldview, and how important is it for Christians to understand the Christian theistic worldview?
Well, it's very important. First thing that you must realize is that everyone has a worldview. There's no escaping it.
Yes.
Your worldview is kind of the sum total of how you understand all of reality and how it all fits together. So the way you look at marriage, the way you understand where right and wrong come from, or what right and wrong even are they something that we should be beholden to? Or are they something that we can ignore if we so desire it? Should I be out for number one, be out for me, or do I need to put others before myself? All of these kinds of issues is how we filter things. It's like going to the movies. 3D movies have never been a real big attraction for me, you know, but when you go to a 3D movie, you have to put on the glasses, right? So you can see the movie clearly. Now, if you go to a 3D movie today, the glasses are clear. In the 50s, they were like red and blue.
Yeah.
And if you go to a modern movie wearing red and blue glasses, it's not going to make much sense. I mean, you're going to be able to kind of follow the plot, but everything's going to look distorted, out of focus. And that's what worldview is. It's whatever glasses you're wearing, mm-hmm. in order to make your worldview make sense. And what I found is with Christianity, it's the only worldview where it brings everything into focus. Now, we can't understand everything about everything. We're not omniscient or anything like that.
Right.
But Christianity tends to make the most sense out of the biggest questions and leave some of the more difficult ones off to the side. For example, you had read that story earlier about the Hindu,
yes.
and how evil and good is. This is a great piece. When I tell you that a lot of people ask Christians, you know, what about God and the problem with evil? Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You get to turn that around and say, well, what about the problem of evil with the atheist?
Right.
You know, evolution says the world is just red in tooth and claw, right?
Yeah.
Evil is just one of those things. It just happens. Now, how comforting is that going to be when the atheist sits down next to the mother of a 2-year-old with cancer and saying, well, I guess she just wasn't as fit as some of the other kids.
Right.
And this is evolution's way of weeding her out.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't the problem of evil a problem for them as well? Isn't the problem of evil a problem for those in the Eastern faith who says evil is merely an illusion, like good is an illusion? Right. And neither one of them, you know, so they ignore the problem of evil. Christianity at least has a solution to the problem of evil, and that solution comes in the person of Jesus Christ, who sacrificed himself and will at one day make all things new.
Yes.
So while we deal with the problem of evil today, the ultimate end goal, right, the sufferings of this present age are not worthy to be compared to the glories that are to come. Yes. And so we see that that there is actually a solution to the problem of evil. Christianity is the only worldview that offers that solution.
Yes.
So this is why worldview is important, because it helps us answer these questions, answer these issues, and at the same time see exactly why Christianity gives us a truer view, a truer picture of the world than some of these other faiths.
Yes, that's right. And I think when we understand the Christian theistic worldview, it makes it much easier to approach believers and encourage them to become involved in apologetic training and education as a means of evangelism and discipleship. And as you've already pointed out, Lenny, there is literally just thousands and thousands of different resources available today, much of them free. They can go online to a number of places. Your ministry website, for example, a lot of good resources there. Well, you mentioned that you do a lot of traveling to churches, you speak at conferences, college campuses, and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense, Lenny, that there's a general awakening to the value of believers training their minds in order to do evangelism?
Well, I definitely think, like I said, the interest is increasing. And part of that comes from the fact that polite company in previous years used to say, oh, you're a Christian, isn't that nice? And maybe they would go home behind closed doors and talk about, you know, the wacko Jesus freak to their wives. Nowadays, it's become more open and more blatant, especially online. And one of the things that I tell students in my class is that, you know, you're going to face this. You're going to put up, maybe you're just having a really good morning, and so you post a psalm or a proverb, you know, that you are so blessed, and blessed be the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad with it. And all of a sudden, a friend or a family member comes up and says, oh, how can you believe that 2,000-year-old mythology in the Bible?
Yes.
And you're going like, I wasn't talking to anyone. I was just rejoicing in the Lord. What the heck just happened to me? So you're getting more of that, more of the understanding that there's a need there. Mm-hmm. But also when I go and I speak, usually the reaction is, I had no idea that this kind of way of approaching my belief was even available. I had no idea I could be as intellectually satisfied as I am spiritually.
Yes.
And really, that's a shame, because Christ, when he gave his command that we should love the Lord our God, we should love him with our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And it's interesting that Jesus adds mind, where the Deuteronomy passage from which he was quoting, that's the one piece that wasn't there. Heart, soul, and strength are in the Deuteronomy passage in Deuteronomy 6, but mind, Jesus adds for emphasis that you have to be intellectually engaged in God as much as you are relationally.
Yes.
And really, this makes sense. When you date somebody, you know, I always tell I have four boys, and I tell all my boys, the movies is a terrible first date. Movies is a bad first. Why? Because you never get to talk to the girl. You're both silent, sitting at a screen. You know, you need to engage one another. If you really love someone, you will want to know more about them. You want to know how they think. You want to know how they tick. And this is part of what apologetics does, is the study of theology and the study of apologetics understands how God works himself out in the ways of the world. And so people, again, when they get this, it's almost like, wow, here's the missing piece I never knew I was missing. And they get truly excited about it. Now, the problem is that it's really hard to get in front of people ahead of time. You know, they don't, again, there's that misconception of apologetics. Oh, that means that I'm going to be arguing with somebody.
Right.
You know, you guys do arguments. Well, it's not arguments, like shouting, you know.
Right.
So, well, what is apologetics? Is it the study of husbands learning how to apologize for their wife? No, that's not it. But that's what we see is when people, it's kind of like a try it, you like it, you'll like it thing. And once they get exposed, they do get excited. But it's just a matter of getting out there and again, not saying you have to be really, you don't have to be an egghead. You know, we've talked about a lot of issues that are really easy for folks to understand. Most of the best issues out there are easy for folks. folks to understand.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be an egghead, you just have to grasp the ideas.
Yeah, and I think, Lenny, when pastors and church leaders come to understand that teaching believers, teaching their fellowships apologetics will embolden them,
yeah,
in their faith, it will supercharge their passion and their heart for sharing Christ, because all of a sudden that light bulb comes on and they think, wow, we have got some rich intellectual resources here that are very satisfying rationally and logically, and still, even in a culture of disbelief we live in today, most people are still looking for a coherent system of belief that makes sense and isn't logically inconsistent, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I see this all the time. There was one time when I took a group up to Berkeley, and I had two, I think these girls were high school, maybe they were juniors or 15, 16 years old. And Berkeley is not an intellectually inferior school. You got to have some chops to get into
Right.
these.
Right. Yes.
So these two girls were going out, and they were going to talk to some students. They approached a couple of biomed majors. So here you are at Berkeley, and then you're getting, the cream of the crop of the campus. And they were nervous. They told me afterwards, yeah, we were a little bit nervous. But
sure.
Then they start asking these questions, and they come back with these huge smiles on their faces. And they say, these guys couldn't even tell us where morality comes from. They had no idea. And you could just see in these girls' eyes that their confidence in their own
and
the way they share, it's built up to such a, when they go to college and they sit in front of a professor who tries to knock Christianity down, in their minds they're going to say, look, we've heard it from atheists who know these arguments better than you, who have said them better than you, and we know that there's answers to them. There's no way that these girls are going to get knocked off their faith because they've had that experience. And you're absolutely right. And when you're in, I don't know if you've ever had the experience yourself, but you've read something and you've read the counter argument, and then you go out and you start talking with somebody, and the guy says, yeah, but what about all the, what about the contradictions in the Bible? What about the number of women at the tomb? Mm. I already know the answer to that. I've read that article, so I know how to answer that. And all of a sudden, your confidence builds because they start to go, is there anything else? And the other person's like, I don't know. Like, so all of a sudden that really does make you feel a little bit more secure. Now, again, we don't want to be, we're not trying to beat people over the head.
No.
Or,
right.
Put another notch on our belts. But it does help you in your witnessing, because, you can see how God uses your preparation to work out his plan. David didn't start off by the first time he held a sling, threw it at Goliath. If you read in 1 Samuel, he was shooting at, what do you do all day when you're out in the fields with the sheep? Well, you write some songs, you eat your lunch, and then you set up a bunch of tin cans and you practice. And that's what David was doing, right? And he said, I killed a lion when it came by. I killed a bear when it came by. I got pretty good at using the sling, so that when God called me to the big scene, I was ready.
Yes.
And that's how God prepares us. And this is one way he can do that.
Yes, that's excellent analogy, Lenny. Thank you. So I'm hoping that our listeners have been encouraged, especially those that have been thinking about, okay, I know I need to step up my game. I know that God is impressing upon me that I need to start sharing my faith more. And not be so afraid to do that. I think our conversation has gone a long way towards encouraging them, but I'd like to maybe provide our listeners with some very easy steps that they could take to start educating themselves. We've mentioned several tools already, Lenny, and there are a lot of great books out there. One that I recommend and have passed out to folks in my fellowship is Greg Kugel's Tactics, which is it's a great book. It really is a primer on understanding some basic techniques of conversation. I don't want to say tools to baffle people or anything like that, because that's not the point. But there are weaknesses in people's arguments, and if you can identify those and see them, then it's very easy to point them out in a loving way and help them to understand that their belief is inconsistent. And so what ways or what could we tell our listeners, what could we point them to start educating themselves apologetically? Where would you recommend they start?
Well, one book that I like to recommend for a lot of people is Love Your God with All of Your Mind by J.P. Moreland, because it's more big picture that talks about how Christianity has lost the intellectual mind and why it's important and how we can get it back. I think that's a really good first book to get people excited about learning, just about the concept of learning. From there's a lot of great resources. You had Jim Wallis on just now. Last weekend, his books are wonderful on the idea of both the existence of God and the resurrection. Of course, Lee Strobel's books, The Case for Christ, The Case for the Creator, The Case for Faith, are great jumping off points that give you a broad overview. William Lane Craig, his On Guard book, which is a kind of a layperson's version of Reasonable Faith. Reasonable Faith was written for his seminary students. On Guard was written for a general audience. That's a great book that you can go to as well. Those are some good ones. There's some other ones that are coming along nowadays that are talking about the relationship building side. You have Oz Guinness's Fool's Talk, and the one that just came out by Michael Sherard, which is Relational Apologetics. And then there's, like as you said, tons of websites that you can go through and really find a lot of information. We do a weekly podcast of my classes. So if you're not in Southern California, obviously, you can listen in on those podcasts every week. And there's a whole backlog of those. There's a YouTube video channel, and I'm writing a blog post every day. And so there's all kinds of ways that you can grab some of this and get into more of the details. But starting off with those broader pictures, I think, is a good way to go.
Yes. Yeah, all of those are excellent books. I do want to add one to that list that I've used for a number of years, and actually I've used it as a text and taught through it three separate times in church settings, and that is James Sire's book, The Universe Next Door. Yeah, for worldview, it is one of the best out there, and really is written for a layperson's.
Matter of fact, Sire's other book, Why Good Arguments Fail, is a nice follow-up.
Oh, yes.
Because it talks about, hey, I've got all the right answers, but nobody's listening to me. What happened? And that's kind of another another approach, another view on how building relationships makes a difference.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Lenny, you mentioned your website and your podcast. I'd like to emphasize that again. Your website is www.comereason.org. And again, your podcasts are out there. Some of the classes that you teach, those are out there. And that's all free.
And the YouTube channel is free. And like I said, I'm writing an article every day, so you can follow that. All of that stuff is out there and searchable and able to be easily digested.
And they can find you on YouTube just by searching for Come Reason.
Everything is Come Reason. So you can go to youtube.com/ComeReason. Twitter, I'm on Twitter, so twitter.com/ComeReason. Instagram, pick a social media, it's /ComeReason, and you'll find me.
Come Reason, excellent. Any projects you're currently working on or engaged in you want to share?
I just finished a chapter for Sean McDowell. He has a book coming out next year called A New Kind of Apologist. And I did a project for him that talks about using popular films and in order to start conversations about worldview. So, you may not be able to get your best friends to come over and watch, The Son of God on television. Especially if they're secularists or atheists, they may be a little resistant to that. Maybe they won't even watch God's Not Dead. But they might come over to watch, say, The Truman Show or The Dark Knight. Can we leverage those kinds of films to show yes. them the truths of Christianity. And so that book should be coming out next year. Sean, of course, was the editor of the Apologetics Study Bible for Students, which is another excellent resource where they took 150 of the top questions that students have, and they wrote articles in order to answer all of those. And they're right in the Bible. And I contributed three articles to that publication. And they have all kinds of archaeological finds. And that, so if you're talking with a Jehovah's Witness about John 1:1, and you go to John 1:1, there's notes in there that says, here's what the Jehovah's Witnesses are going to talk about with John 1:1. So it's a great resource even in and of itself. So
perfect.
Yeah, doing some writing, hopefully yeah. having some new things. I'll be in Atlanta in November, and I'll be in North Carolina in October, and I'm in Arizona this month in August. So I'm traveling around.
Is your speaking schedule on your
it
website?
It is. You can go to the calendar okay. section. There are the events. I think it's listed under events and find those there. And those monthly classes are free and open to anyone to come. You don't have to register or anything. Just show up. And if you're in Southern California, I'd love to see you.
Excellent. So folks, if you want to catch up with Lenny, check out his website and his schedule, his speaking schedule, and maybe hook up with him in those places and let him know that you heard this episode and you were encouraged by it. Lenny, I appreciate you being on the program with me today, and I think that we're going to have to do a follow-up.
I love it, Mike. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, God bless you, Lenny. Thank you. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad. You can listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.micah68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, PastorMike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek Him.